I thought it was hilarious. And as a writer, Terry Southern is very original. You know, you can see under Terry Southern's work how much he'd read. It creates a resonance in his work that I think is very apparent.
It's easy to forget how varied a writer he was, how many things he tried to do.
He was a novelist, a short story writer. He was a screenwriter, a book reviewer, an essay writer. One of his great skills was taking pages of dialogue and reducing it to just a couple of lines exchanged between a couple of characters that would say more about the situation than all those pages combined.
An example is Easy Rider. The Jack Nicholson sections in that movie, that character, it stands so clearly above the rest of the film, the level of the writing and just the idiosyncrasy of that character. That's Terry Southern, you're feeling, and it's the same in Dr. Strangelove.
I think Terry's work is important to be read today. Anyone interested can look at Terry's work and learn something.
He's one of those writers who got into the bloodstream, in a way, the cultural bloodstream. If you were to go in and just sort of pluck him out of history, a lot of stuff disappears, you know?
So I think it's really important that he is available to be known. It's more important to be known than remembered.
Kubrick decides that the now comedic script requires a degree of inspired lunacy. However, he feels the story should place the absurdities within a realistic framework. He turns to writer Terry Southern, whose novel Candy caused a media sensation with its bold and satiric look at modern sexuality.
I think he contributed a great deal to the satire of the film. Terry Southern was an incredible character with a quirky sense of humor, so he was ideal for the project.
Terry was always a political being and a humanist. The Cold War and the nuclear threat was something that was just part of his existential attitude towards these kinds of things, that it was really just systems of power that were out of control and that should be questioned without a doubt. And Terry was in this unique position of being the hipster, being the existentialist, being at the top of his literary form, and bridging that gap from, let's say, the Beats to Hollywood.
Although Kubrick had initially planned to shoot the film in New York, he ultimately decides that Shepperton Studios in England can more suitably accommodate the production. Southern flies to London, and for 2 months, he collaborates with Kubrick on the script during some very unorthodox daily writing sessions.
Stanley would say to Terry, what's the most outrageous thing this character can say and still be credible? And so Terry would just go at it, and that's how you'd come up with things like purity of essence of bodily fluids. And Dr. Strangelove, of course, is probably the best title of all time.
But it seemed to us that probably the subtitle was Stanley's, How I Stopped Worrying and Learned to Love the Bomb, because that doesn't sound like Terry.
Right.
Terry Southern, you know, was a writer who had a very sort of kinky sense of humor.
Terry is a bad boy, you know. He's ideal for writing the edgy part of Strangelove.
With the help of Terry Southern, he constructed, I think, the most perfectly written comic screenplay of the post-war cinema.
Actually, they would breed prodigiously, eh? There would be much time and little to do. But with the proper breeding techniques and a ratio of, say, 10 females to each male, I would guess that they could then work their way back to the present gross national product within, say, 20 years.
But look here, Doctor, wouldn't this nucleus of survivors be so grief-stricken and anguished that they'd, well, envy the dead and not want to go on living?
No, sir. Excuse me. Also, then, when they go down into the mine, everyone would still be alive. There would be no shocking memories. And the prevailing motion will be one of nostalgia for those left behind, combined with a spirit of bold curiosity for the adventure ahead.
You mentioned the ratio of 10 women to each man. Wouldn't that necessitate the abandonment of the so-called monogamous sexual relationship, as far as men were concerned?
Regrettably, yes. But it is, you know, a sacrifice required for the future of the human race. I hasten to add that since each man will be required to do prodigious service along these lines, the women will have to be selected for their sexual characteristics, which will have to be of a highly stimulating nature.
Oh, Porgy! Oh, my! Porgy, tell you about it!
You're coming, Mother!
Is it him?
Yes, it's him. He's here. He's here again right now.
About time. Only 17 minutes left.
Hiya, boys.
How you doing, Doc?
Uncle Underground with the funnies. And I got two of your favorite actors with us today. I got Davy Osmond from the Fess Parker
set. Oh, you're sure lucky.
Over at Universal. He's going to read the funnies to you. Hiya, Davy. And Peter Brinkman.
Oh.
Peter Brinkman's from the Corrective Studies Language Institute.
That's right.
And they're here today, kids, to help us, help me stay in this accent, and read the funnies to you. Well, today's funny. Let's open up the big Sunday paper here. Ah, it's Sunday. Gee, it's great to be alive.
I'll hold this side, Uncle.
Yeah. In the meantime, you know, you can pick up some of these Uncle Underground stickers for 50 cents at any free press book. Store. Now let's turn right to the first one here. Here we go. These are, well, now this one, kids, is called Dwarf Revolt Tales, right? And it shows here a picture in the first one of a dwarf.
Those dwarves, as we well, say and the, down on the
and
old
the,
universal
and the dwarf law. Says,
I'm gonna warm up the Empress. Go lay down.
And then the, here, I'll, the comely empress and her favorite dwarf amused themselves in the coldest room of the castle.
Cold ain't the word for it in here.
I love it like my own.
Keep twisting.
let's go over here now past the Dick Tracy, and here's one by a Moscoso. And here, well, I guess we can't. Here's a good one by R. Haight.
Uh-huh.
And this one, we could look here at hydrogen bomb and biochemical warfare funnies, and
I've got one over here. This is Ruby the meets.
This has been the Uncle Underground show for another Sunday, kids. We'll be back.
Hey, I found
Sunday.
One I can read, partners. The Adventures of Fuzzy the Bunny. Just like old times. Here are these two bunnies, and they...
Give me my trousers.
Ah, help! Help! Help!
There's a one-eyed snake in your trousers.
I hate snakes. Give him the champagne.
The snake is now drunk.
Ah, good. I'll hold on to it.
Hello, Pet Cemetery.
Hi, I wonder if I might get some information regarding your burial services.
Certainly.
You do handle pets?
Yes, indeed.
We've got quite a problem. We've got an 11-foot python that just passed on.
A snake?
Yes.
Yeah?
And we were kind of hoping that you could do something with it.
Well, do you want to have it cremated?
Well, I don't know if that would be the answer. There's a problem. What happened was, we normally feed this python small pigs.
You feed it what?
Small pigs.
Small pigs?
Yes, they swallow them whole, you see. And we must have given him a pig that was too large.
Well, is it dead?
What, the pig?
No. Well, both of them. Are they both dead?
Oh, yes.
Well, do you want to have it cremated? We can cremate it. We can do that.
What do you charge for that?
$30.
Well, now, let me ask you this. Does that include the urn?
No, that's just cremation only. Your urns run extra.
How much would that be?
Your bronze urn runs, let's see, well, your stainless steel is $7.50, and your baby bronze is $26.
Well, now, let's talk burial for a minute.
Huh?
You see, this baby is 11 feet long. Do you have 11-foot caskets?
No. What we do there, you see, is curl it up, coil it up.
Well, no. What I mean is... Can they extract the pig that's stuck?
Well, it'll be dead, won't it?
Oh, yes.
Well, then why extract it? I mean, it'll still curl up, won't it?
No, I follow. You mean bury them together?
Well, yeah.
And what about your cost there for burial?
Well, your burial would run $45.
$45 a piece?
Huh?
$45 for the pig, too?
No, no, we wouldn't charge for the pig. I mean, unless you wanted a separate marker for him.
For the pig?
Yeah.
No, no, we don't want a marker for the pig.
Uh-huh. Well, that would run you $45.
Does that include pickup?
Plus $250 pickup.
Well, now, wait a minute. You've got 65 pounds of python here. And about 8 pounds of pig.
Yeah, well, that's what it would be.
All right.
Well, we'll be right over.
Okay, listen, be discreet about it, will you? My wife, well, she was very attached to him.
Look down, dear son. A river of buffalo drinking from a hidden spring. Can you see in their midst a white buffalo?
Balanced on a raft of water in an endless river of reeds, they conversed inexplicably with an ancient cockroach in a sombrero they knew instantly to be
Don Brouhaha. Follow this snake,
he said.
Follow this snake. This snake is a river,
he said. They jumped on the snake and rode it hard like a bronco to where the snake was swallowed by the sea. And they looked in a direction they had never looked before, and they saw a city of gold and amber and crystal in the sky at the bottom of the sea. And at the gate of that city, a white buffalo was grazing. And raising its great head, met their gaze directly.
And on the left side of the frame, I see the bank of a river, and I start lifting the camera and leaving the scene of the wreck. And I keep yelling, keep going up, higher, higher, higher. And I hear the chopper just going like crazy. I still get the goosebumps, you know, because I remember every time I see the ending of this movie, I remember this how exciting, how difficult, and how tough was to make it, you know, but we made it.
Bobby Dylan said, what does the end of the movie mean to you? I wasn't ready for that question. I said, well, you know, you see, there's the road that man builds, and we can see that. And then there's the river, and that's the road that God builds. You know, so you can see what happens on the road that man builds. So he just picked up a bat. That river flows to the sea. Wherever that river goes, that's where I want to be. Flow, river, flow past the green shady tree. Flow, river, flow to the sea.
The river flows. It flows to the sea. Wherever that river goes, that's where I want to be. Flow, river, flow. Let your waters wash down. Take me from this road to some other town.
Now, speaking of animals, it says here that Las Vegas was so named because it was once marshy wetlands overrun by beavers.
Really?
I guess some things never change.
Yes. Well, Elvis was really ahead of his time, wasn't he?
What do you mean?
You know, one of his biggest hits.
Beavers, Las Vegas, beavers, Las Vegas.
Have you checked your hearing aid?
You know, I have never gotten a check for Medicaid.
The last time I was in Vegas, the strip was jammed with families and little kids. And everywhere I looked, there were ads for threesomes, S&Ms, M&Ms, you name it.
Well, don't be so quick to condemn, my friend. Every one of those hookers is somebody's daughter.
Yeah, it brings a whole new meaning to family fun, though, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Besides, as they say, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Unless you bring home a dose of the clap.
As Kubrick prepares to screen Dr. Strangelove for critics, he finds the film has a rendezvous with destiny. The screening date is November 22nd, 1963.
Like everything else in America, the events of November 22nd, 1963, John F. Kennedy's assassination, moved everything, shook everything up.
We decided for obvious reasons that we better cancel the preview. Stanley was there, and Stanley readily agreed. In fact, he may have even been the first one to suggest canceling, but Stanley had a more specific reason, because unlike the rest of us, Stanley knew the dialogue.
Our president has just been assassinated, and now we're going to see the president of the United States portrayed in the film, having to make momentous decisions about the future of not only his country, but of the whole world. And it was very much on everyone's mind as to how the public would react to this so soon after.
They also had to change a line in the film, which was when the pilot, Slim Pickens, is going through the content survival check. And he's saying, you know, prophylactics, lipstick, nylon stockings. Then he says, hell, a fella could have a pretty good time in Dallas with all that stuff. And of course, you look at his, he had to loop in, and the line now is Vegas.
Shoot, a fella could have a pretty good weekend in Vegas with all that stuff.
During the period I was writing the piece, I began spreading a rumor about the crucial scene so that underground gossip would build up, and when it finally appeared in print, there would already be a certain degree of familiarity. I talked about it on the stage at the Village Theater, and I mentioned it to friends on the phone. One of those I told was Terry Southern. A week later, he called back and asked if I wanted him to write it up for The Realist. I said I had already done so. But he obviously had his own version of that infamous scene in mind, and not wanting to waste his creativity, he proceeded to mold it into a short story, The Blood of a Whig.
Can we do Blood of the Whig? Not this week, but we'll do it another week.
Oh, sure. We'll be happy to do it next week.
Sure, next week, the Terry Southern story. Done.
Great.
Done.
Well, now, I forgot to tell you that last night at the Endicott Bookshop, a certain years to give a reading, was arranged by the publisher, of course, and so I read The Sun in the Stillborn Stars. There were about 200 people there, maybe 150. And small, you know, the Endicott. And so that went over very well, indeed. But then they wanted more, so I said, well, I have this one story, Blood of a Whig, some highlights and excerpts. And so I read the takeoff on the suppressed passages, deleted passages of the Manchester book of the Kennedy assassination. And I set it up by saying that the narrator is a fiction editor under the influence of this schizophrenic blood. Quote, the first few passages were fairly innocuous, the emphasis being on a style identical to that of the work in question. Towards the end of chapter 6, however, with Jackie on the Air Force One plane in the compartment with the casket, I really started cooking. Wan and totally bereft, she steals away from the others, moving trance-like towards the darkened rear compartment where the casket rests. She enters, and a whispery circle of light shrouds her bowed head. As she closes the door behind her and leans against it, slowly she raises her eyes and takes a solemn step forward. She gasps and is literally slammed back against the door by the sheer impact of the outrageous horror confronting her, i.e., the hulking Texan silhouette at the casket, lid half raised, and he, hunching bestially, his coarse animal member thrusting into the casket, and indeed, apparently, into the neck wound itself. Great God, she cries, how heinous. It must be a case of necrophilia.
So guess who's writing the scene? Karen, I've got this wacky typewriter in this Winnebago, and Terry Southern is sitting across from me going,
I really love underpants. Do you think that we could have a scene where you take your underpants off and stuff them in a rock?
Please help me to conceive a child.
The shop on this corner of Grove was a man's underwear shop, and the hunchback's eyes devoured another crotch or two before he looked up. He was also smiling. He supposed she was a policewoman. Rub-a-dub-dub, he said,
agitating his hump vigorously against the tree. Getting run in was part of his kick.
Three men in a tub. How wonderfully simple the important things are.
She felt very relaxed with the hunchback, as he now decided quite simply that she was a nut. Hungry, he said. Rub-a-dub-dub. She heard a wisdom and complex symbology in the hunchback's simple phrases. It was as though she were behind the scenes of something like the Dadaist movement, even creatively a part of it.
This is the way things happen. The really big things that 10 years later changed the course of history. Just this way, on the street corners of the village, and here I am part of it.
Never lower Tilly's pants.
Mama Might Come Home. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the correct answer is in from Mrs. Ella Gilland of Los Angeles, California. It is, she writes, a mnemonic key to the bones of the wrist. Navicular, lunate, triangular, pisiform, greater multiangular, lesser multangular, capitate, and hamate. Never lower Tilly's pants, Mama Might Come Home contest has been won.
Oh, look at this nice underwear, Mr. Ambassador. Doesn't it make a fine hat on my head, huh?
It is a gift to you from the American people.
I.E. Viz, BVD, Biz.
Underwear industry. It is estimated that no underwear will be worn by the year 2020.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may